Didn't have any onions tonight. Feel free to move forward. Anyway, it's been a beautiful week. Now, I've actually seen a major outpouring of love and caring, generosity, and a rise of determination and a kind of fierce caring for our planet, for each other. And so this could be, this may not be that, this could be a good time, as the Hopi elders say. If we connect with each other and we don't forget what needs to be remembered. And of course, I think you would not be here if you weren't trying to remember what needs to be remembered. And I'd love to hear from some of you tonight, but I also wanted to just share a few thoughts that I had during the sitting tonight. It may not feel relevant to you, but it was meaningful to me when I had the memory of a long meditation retreat that I did back in the 1980s. I had the good fortune, and sometimes it didn't feel like the good fortune, of working with a Burmese teacher who had been through a lot in his practice. And I had spent time practicing with him in Burma, and I had been tormented by physical illness, and I was really quite uncomfortable. And I went to see this teacher in Burma at the time that I was there. And I said, I need to eat something after 10 in the morning other than oily fish soup. My stomach is burning, and I need to eat. I need to break the precept. The precept is not eating any solid food after 12 noon, and everyone agreed to that in the monastery in Burma. And he said, no. And at that moment that he said no, I got furious. I got so pissed off that I completely ignored all the protocol of properly bowing three times and then leaving the quarters of the teacher. And I just let venom come out of my eyes toward him, and I just took off. Frustrated desire, intensely wounded feeling of pride. And I left, and then I realized that I'm going to be here for 3 months, and I can't very well continue like this. So I went back and I apologized, and he proceeded to tell me a story of his own experience of being a monk in Sri Lanka. And in Sri Lanka, he became, as he described it, he had the winds running through his body, and his teachers wouldn't provide him any kind of extra support, and he said it helped him develop this kind of fortitude, this kind of strength. So I had that experience, and I worked with it, and it helped me develop a little bit of a capacity to accommodate really uncomfortable experiences. Maybe you can extrapolate a little bit of that to what's happened for many of you in the last week. But the vignette that I actually thought of tonight is really in a similar vein. I was sitting another long retreat with him. I followed him around for about 4 years. And in this retreat, I was just in a state of utter despair about life. And it wasn't so much life and the life situation, but just about the pain of being human, the pain of being alive. And there are certain points in your practice when your mind and body become very quiet and very open, where it really dawns on a person who's practicing how utterly painful it is to be human, how hard it is to be born, how hard it is to go through what we go through. It's classically called sankhara dukkha, the dukkha of just everything that we have to deal with. Dukkha meaning that which is difficult to bear, unsatisfactoriness, unreliability, just all the things that are difficult of life, in life. And of course, the teachings are that this is, if you're born, this is what comes with the territory, things that are hard to bear. But sometimes it's so intense, and maybe you felt this in the last week, it's so intense, the pain of existence at certain times. And in the depth of a retreat, every sense, every door of perception felt as though it was too much to handle, too much to bear. Just anything that I saw caused pain, anything I heard caused pain, anything I felt caused pain. And it may sound kind of ridiculous now, but when you're in that level of sensitivity, you realize, wow, it's not as pleasant as we all think it should be here. It's really painful. So I also had heard these teachings before about sankhara dukkha. And I went and I started thinking as I was going through this retreat, I'm experiencing sankhara dukkha. Then I started to get very identified with experiencing sankhara dukkha. When I say I got identified, I became the one who's experiencing sankhara dukkha. It was a kind of pride. I was really seeing into the nature of reality. And I was getting so full of myself without really knowing it about how much suffering I was having and how much I understood how painful life is. Any of you ever have that experience? So I went to the teacher thinking that I could just tell the teacher, Sayadaw Upandita, I am realizing sankhara dukkha. And meanwhile, as I was going to see him, it was as though I was dragging my body in to see the great guru, and he was perhaps would relieve me from, would tell me how wonderful a yogi, and then I would feel good about that, and maybe I wouldn't feel quite as miserable. And so I reported to him how much I'm experiencing sankhara dukkha, and it was just dripping out of my mouth. And he looked at me, and sometimes he'd look at me and he'd just pick up a book and start reading, because he would see me coming. He saw all the pride. And this time he looked at me and he said just a short phrase that just cut right through my embellishment of what was going on. He said, just see dukkha as dukkha. Just see suffering as suffering. I had built a monument to the suffering. I had taken what was genuinely painful and impinging and turned it into a whole identity, had turned it into a drama far beyond the simple reality of what was happening. So tonight when I thought of that, it came to me out of nowhere. I hadn't thought about it in quite a long time. But I think it's a little bit analogous to maybe a tendency that some of us may have had this week, understandably, to feel the pain of all that could be, and just the shock and dismay and the disappointment and the fury and so much fear. But rather than just feel that, feel it, experience dukkha as dukkha, our tendency, and I know my tendency was and still is to a certain degree, was to spin out, was to proliferate, to move beyond the bare facts of my experience and meet it with kindness, and instead just started living in the incredible anticipation of what was to come. And then fabricating worlds upon worlds of things that were just compounding my suffering. Not seeing dukkha as dukkha, but adding mental suffering to the already just the fact of the pain of whatever was happening. So I'm not saying all of you experienced, you all had some dukkha last week, if you're human, but you may have had a special form of dukkha because of the election. And I think part of the possibility of coming here or sitting down wherever you happen to be is to come a little bit closer to just the basic dukkha. Come to that place where it's just what's happening. Whatever residue is there, using it to call you here, using it to call you back to simplicity, to call you back to the natural peace and ease, believe it or not. Bring you back to the natural peace and ease that is the natural peace and ease of your own nature when you're not spinning out, when you're not going out in search, going out in spinning out. And so when I thought about the natural peace and ease of our own nature, I was happy that all of you were sitting because the peace just starts calling you back. And I'm not saying that your feelings are peaceful. I'm not saying that your mind is quiet. But the mind, the one who knows in you, the awareness through which you're perceiving is always peaceful. Awareness is not affected by the contents of awareness. So awareness of sad and afraid is not afraid. Awareness is quiet. It is a quiet refuge. It is a quiet support for whatever is being felt. It is welcoming. It is embracing. It's peace itself. And it's closer than your breath. But the tendency for all of us, we're conditioned to become very identified with our feelings, with our projections, with our memories, and we forget that there is, as Albert Camus said, in the midst of winter, there is within me an invincible summer. And it's possible to reclaim that even in times like this. And to whatever degree you completely lost touch with any kind of peace and ease, if nothing more, you know, even that should just call forth as much mercy and kindness as you have. It's not your fault. It's just conditioning. Our conditioning is to go out, is to embellish, is to intensify our pain. But the good news is that so much goodwill this week kind of brought me back to. I don't know, many of you may have attended the hands around Lake Merritt, and I attended the beautiful, lengthy peaceful demonstration in Golden Gate Park, which was, you know, thousands of people walking through the park down to the ocean with a chanting Trump, or wait just a second, love Trump's hate, and then variations on that theme. And it's just having the word love in the air and the goodwill and having people of all ages, very multicultural, it just felt like it was a good thing to do, to connect, and kind of helps fortify us to be vigilant and determined to take care of each other from this day forward. So I am interested to hear what's been on your mind. If anyone would like to share your heartbreak, your nothing happened, your sense of, you know, whatever it is that moves you, anyone that feels to speak, or we have the good fortune of having a handheld, what do you call this?
Mic.
No, but what, it's a free wireless mic. Anybody have any comments or questions or... anything anyone would like to say? This is your living room. It's likely that whatever you say or ask about, describe, will be of some benefit to someone else. Thanks, Dave. Remind her to put her mouth close to the... Yes.
Hi, I'm Natalie.
Hi, Natalie.
Responsibility to have difficult conversations and attend events and come to meditation, right? So, like, how can I reconcile my desire for peace with the fire to, like...
Thank you so much for that comment and that question. It's funny, when Natalie was speaking, some of you attended the half day that we did at the Mindfulness Care Center on Saturday. I hadn't had a sustained period of practice since the election, and sitting there hour after hour, I started to feel more and more strong and more determined to you know, fight for whoever is in trouble, whoever is being targeted, whoever is, whether it's our earth or any kind of group that is being targeted right now. And it's really out of that, it felt like there was a direct correlation between connecting with that peace, connecting with that sense of myself where I touch the whole world, which is right where I am, that it's out of that that emerged that kind of, it felt like a fire. And I think the more that I actually do touch into that peace, the more I care, and the more that fire will express itself. I don't think it's either or, and I have not seen anyone in all of my years of teaching, anybody who developed their practice to a certain kind of fruition. I've never seen one person who retired from the world. I've seen only practice translate into social action. I've never seen it the other way. Although I do really appreciate and understand how, because of the way that we are acculturated, sometimes caring for ourselves in this way seems selfish. It seems self-centered. But the paradox is, if we take care of ourselves, then we are full and we so naturally give ourselves to others. If we don't take care of ourselves, don't give ourselves that peace, we end up stuck in ourselves. We end up spinning in our preoccupations. So thank you for the question and the comment. Please.
It's been stressing me out quite a bit, and I've been meditating on it, and contemplating it, and doing a lot of reading, both ancient texts and more recent articles on psychology, of how I can do this effectively. I want very much to understand. I want to come from a place of compassion. But even when I say something to myself, I want to understand. There's a voice that says back,
Heidi has a response. And
it seems crazy, but I just want to speak to your question because you actually, not that I have anything to say that you wouldn't.
No, I love that you're speaking. This is for everyone. Yeah.
The person who's closest to me probably right now is actually somebody who lives here in the Bay Area, but would be what you might call a red state in this case. And it's very difficult for me. I bawled my eyes out for days. I've been barfing, and I'm just about as unhappy as I could be in some ways, and I'm okay with that. Okay with being that way for now. I'm not cheered up yet, but it was really touching because I was really afraid to talk to him, right after it happened. And we just sort of have this agreement where it's he was really worried about me, are you okay? And I said, I know this is something we can't talk about. He said, we don't have to talk about politics. I just want to know about your well-being. I just care about your well-being. I was really moved by that because a few days later he said to me, my buddy wants me to go out for a drink with him to celebrate because he knows I'm the only guy in the Bay Area go with him, and I was I hope you enjoy your drink, because what else can you say? So I thought what really grabbed me about that is I just thought, we care so much about each other. And we're both being really respectful. And then when we had the deeper conversation about how could either of us feel the way we feel, it really did come down to the fact that we both feel that we care about people. We just have different ways of thinking that the solution might be, and we both have different biases from our own personal experiences. And hearing him talk about his own kind of biases and stuff, it gave me a lot of compassion. So not to go on too long, but the linguist, what's his name from Berkeley? You know him, you guys know him.
George Lakoff.
Yeah, that's him. He actually recommends when you talk to people to try to get them telling personal stories about their own values and then try to kind of share how you share those values and they're linked in this way and kind of gradually move it there, and then you'll be able to understand them and they'll be able to understand you. Anyway, I just appreciate your question because that's something I've been really struggling with. Yeah.
You could give it today. Tell you the truth, I haven't a clue. Although, I could only fantasize about what I would want to do. My default in a time where I feel alien is what has really cut through my alien feeling, that other feeling, is if I've done what I call stealth metta, where I'm just wishing people well. And what it's allowed me to do is to connect with the humanity of that person, and somehow it just creates a little crack in the heart, so that at least I'm weeding out my own ill will. And if I'm not coming from a place of ill will, it's much more workable. And then that's really the heart of the teachings of the Metta Sutta. I would take a copy of the Metta Sutta and read it over and over, because it's all about non-contentiousness. It's all about not putting anybody out of your heart. It's all about not being too caught up in right and wrong, who's right and who's wrong, but much more the Dharma way is non-contentiousness. And just the willingness to be a work in progress. I think we all want to have it all just go just right. And I think there has to be a willingness to have it go wrong, because that can create its own kind of fear, that it has to somehow, I have to get through, I have to either convince or I have to say just the right thing, and that creates too much pressure. So lots of self-loving kindness, lots of stealth metta. These are simple ways, but just the word non-contentious. if nobody is eager to speak, I thought that I would just reinforce a few things that I said by reading a poem from Steve Taylor called "The Only Place." When the future is full of dread and the past is full of regret, where can you take refuge except in the present? When maelstroms of tormenting thoughts push back the barricades of your sanity, the present is the calm center where you can rest. And slowly, as you rest there, here, the niggling thoughts and fears dissolve like shadows shrinking under the midday sun, until you don't need refuge anymore. The present is the only place where there is no thought-created pain. The present is the only place. Or since we are walking out of here in the next few minutes, end with a poem from Dana Falds called "Walk Slowly." It only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still, and just like that, something inside me settles, softens, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper, and I remember again that life isn't a relay race, that we all will cross the finish line, that waking up to life is what we are born for. As many times as I forget to catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times I can make the choice to stop, to breathe, and be, and walk slowly into the mystery. So let's love ourselves by remembering this calm center, and knowing that this calm center is the place from which my love flows, my skillfulness flows, my clarity, my capacity to be of benefit to this world that needs it so much right now. So may my practice, our practice tonight, and all the goodness, all the fruits, all the merit, all the benefits that have arisen from our practice, may it be shared determinedly, ferociously, lovingly, for the benefit of all beings, without any exception. For all of the Hillary voters and all of the Trump voters. For Hillary and for Trump. And all the beings of this earth, of the air, of the lands, of the waters, may our practice continue to be dedicated to the welfare and benefit of all beings. May all beings feel the love of our practice. May all beings live with ease. May all beings feel safe from inner and outer harm. May all beings be well. Thank you all. Thanks for your practice. And all beings, thank you for your practice. Don't doubt that it has an impact. And please pile the chairs in piles of four and move them against the wall. Any help with that is deeply appreciated. And thank you for your generosity. And hope to see you next Tuesday.